If I looked at Bitcoin as an asset to a business, and there are a couple of veterinarians that I know, again, that hold Bitcoin as an asset on their balance sheet because they maybe want to expand or they want to hire an associate, they want to do something. And so how do they store their value? They can hold it in dollars, they can, you know, pay down debt, or they could buy Bitcoin. Now that's a very small, I can count them on my hand how many are doing that today.
Hello, positive leaders. Thanks for joining us today. You are listening to the Positive Leadership Podcast with Andrea Crabtree and David List, a podcast for everything a veterinary manager needs to know to get the job done. We've been there and we know how hard it is and are here to help share our knowledge and expertise to elevate you. I'm Andrea Crabtree, co-founder of Positive Leadership Podcast, owner of FurPaws Consulting, a certified veterinary practice manager, and HR certified professional.
And I'm David Liss, co-founder of the Positive Leadership Podcast. I'm also a certified veterinary practice manager, hold an MBA, and I'm a registered veterinary technician.
And this podcast is for you, the veterinary practice manager, supervisor, leader. We want to elevate you by equipping you with relevant content, material, guidelines, instruction, feedback, and pro tricks and tips.
We will deliver real life experience along with our super smart guests that will get you through the obstacles that you're facing today with some bloopers and blunders along the way to remind you that you're not alone.
FurPaws Consulting has deep expertise in helping veterinary practices reach their full potential for all types of practices, whether specialty, emergency, or general practice, by working alongside the practice owner and manager. Are you a practice owner or practice manager with a challenge and not enough bandwidth to tackle it? Reach out to me, Andrea Crabtree, owner of FurPaws Consulting, with the question that keeps you up at night. I'm able to provide expertise and insight to navigate those tricky obstacles. Find my info in the show notes. Email me at andrea@furpaws.us or check out my website at www.furpawsconsulting.com.
Hello, hello, positive leaders. We are so excited to be here with you all again. We are rounding either out the end of the year, starting the new year. It's going to be super great to move into 2024. We're really excited to have another awesome, super smart guest with us. Isaiah Douglas is with Swan Private Client Services, and Isaiah is a certified financial planner. So Isaiah, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Look forward
to it. Thank you so much. So we don't like to read stuffy bios at the Positive Leadership Podcast. So we would love for you to tell all of the listeners about yourself. You know, what's your origin story and what are you doing today?
Yeah, a unique kind of path. I'm not a DVM, don't have them in my family, like that kind of connection. But to make a really long story short, it was came into financial services in 2015. And worked at Merrill Lynch for 3 years. And while I was there, basically tried to carve out some sort of niche or area of expertise. And through that, it kind of came down to dentistry and then into vet med as I worked with different professional partners that had made comments like, hey, would you be willing to talk to so-and-so? They have similar issues and you seem to like, you know, these conversations. And the dentistry side came from a personal connection. I grew up in rural Indiana. And a guy that I played sports with growing up went to the IU Dental School. He didn't come from money, had a lot of student loan debt, wanted to buy a practice, wanted to get married, wanted to have kids, like all these things, right? And so that was really the genesis for going down that kind of rabbit hole. And then I left Merrill to start my own business and focused exclusively really on those within dentistry and vet med. And vet med continued to take off. And so, you know, I made it a focal point in 2019 and really said, that's who I want to serve and who I want to work through. And work with. And as you all know, vet med's full of great people. And so it just reinforces that. Like as you talk to people and you're like, shoot, like they're actually really cool to work with and I enjoy them. And like, I can have a business around this. It was great. I merged that business. So I had started my own, merged it with a business partner and did that in 2020. Basically, like any business relationship that you have, it's like a marriage or a, you know, you're dating someone. And when they don't work out, you sometimes know, right? Like things happen. And so ultimately for me in the summer of this year, 2023, we parted ways. So I sold my stake in that business back to my business partner and I joined Swan Bitcoin. And the funny thing and the kind of my, I guess, passion and mission is I still have a lot of connections within veterinary medicine. I have a podcast that I started in 2019 called the Veterinary Success Podcast. And again, I've met tons of great people. And so it's the two interests in my life, I would say from a professional standpoint, is vet med and Bitcoin. And so those two things kind of coalescing. And I think that's where I'm going to spend a lot of my time moving forward. And then also business ownership. I think within veterinary medicine, there's been a ton of conversation around, you know, the corporatization of veterinary medicine. Is private practice dead? Like, can good leaders be, you know, all these different things. And like, I love the idea of business, vet med, Bitcoin. So like, that's kind of where I'm at, which is a weird spot to be in, but I'm very blessed and love it. So that's the story.
That's amazing.
Very cool. Vet med, yeah.
And Bitcoin.
Yeah, I know, right? What a great two like smash up there.
Opposites. Yeah, exactly. So Isaiah, do you have a favorite like book or podcast or CE or course or newsletter or something that's kind of left a lasting effect on you? We usually like to ask our guests about something around leadership, but if it's something else that basically changed your life, share it with us so we can share it with our listeners.
Changed my life. I think the instant thing I think of is more Bitcoin related, and I want to stay away from that initially, but I do think that there is some power of that changing because it definitely changed kind of where I felt like my mind shifted and where my career has gone. People have talked about it before, but like James Clear, Atomic Habits, I think rereading that every so often is really, really helpful. I know that's not novel. Lots of listeners, I'm sure, have heard it, heard other people reference it, but it's one of those things that you can revisit quite often and you will grab a new nugget or two or something that sticks because you can read it once and it's like, oh, there's so much great stuff and you're going to try to do too many things. But that's one that comes to mind that I really like.
So I want to go back to you growing up on a rural farm in Indiana. We got a chance to geek out when we were in Maine at the Portland, Maine at the New England Veterinary Medical Conference. We took this super awesome, cool ferry boat ride over to an island and we got these incredibly large lobsters that we did not know what to do with. And we sat at the table like staring at everybody else, like, what the hell do we do with this? You grew up in rural Indiana, and we talked about this, and you growing up on a hog farm, and I mean, your story is amazing. I loved it. We kind of went down the rabbit hole a little bit about talking about you being a financial planner. So I want to know how your early exposure living on a farm life, how that affected and how that influenced the finances in a family life, because I know what that is like growing up and living on a farm and how that early exposure led you down a path where now you have smashed up Bitcoin and the veterinary profession. So how did being a financial planner get you into the veterinary profession or vice versa? And like, how did all of that come from the influence of when knowing finances on a family farm is tough?
It definitely opened my eyes because like I say this a lot when I talk to people around Bitcoin now, like I didn't come from money, right? Like a lot of times when I joined Merrill early on in my career in 2015, a lot of the other guys, right? Because typically in finance, it's a lot
yes,
of guys, right?
It's a bunch of dudes.
It's a little different than vet med at times, but it depends on what age you're kind of hanging out with. But a lot of them, you know, were IU grads, Kelley School of Business, have all these connections, have all these people that they knew. And it's like, I grew up as a poor farm kid. Like, I don't know people with millions of dollars. Like, this is just a different world. But I think one of the things that is a benefit is like anyone that's worked on a farm or everyone that's grown up that way, like the value of work, the blue collar mindset, and just like what that instills in you is very different. Yeah. Like, we're getting close to Christmas. And I can remember at Christmas, like, we couldn't open presents. So my dad went and fed the hogs, right? And he would get up at like 4 a.m. to go do that and then come in. And we were still like, just, you know, like, rabid animal.
Yeah. Christmas, right?
You know, I've been up for a long time doing things. And so I think like that habit of just like, sometimes you have to like do the work. You just got to show up, put your head down and like get shit done. That's always stuck with me. And for me growing up and seeing like, you know, some financial struggles, my parents quit farming it when I was about 12, just because they kind of said, you know, yeah, it's cash in and cash out, but they weren't really getting ahead. And they just felt like it wasn't the right decision for our family. And so they ultimately got out. And I think a lot of farming, family farming has gone away because it's been the get big or get out. And that's a saying that really happened. And that actually is going to lead into a Bitcoin story later on. But the thought process there was I didn't want to be in the same situation that I saw my parents where there was a struggle around money at times.
Yeah,
did I grow up with parents that loved me, that cared about me, all those things? Yes, they did the best that they could. But I was like, I don't want to struggle like they did and see the conversations and the things. And it's like, I'm going to learn about money and I'm going to make money and I'm going to like solve it. Right.
Exactly.
And again, it's so funny to look back and think about, you know, kind of the why and what motivated, but part of just learning about, you know, finances and like what this looks like was important to me. And that kind of led me to want to be a financial advisor, planner, like get into the wealth management space. And initially it was trade stocks, you make money. And it's like, that's not really what a financial planner does. And because I'm not like taking on clients and trying to be a planner that's wanting people to pay me, it's like I can very clearly explain why a financial planner is great without having anyone feel like I'm trying to sell them on anything. I'm like, I'm not in that world anymore. But I think a lot of them are really great because it's a conversation of like, okay, what is this money for, right? Money is a tool and allows you to do a lot of different things. And it's not necessarily, you know, just to accumulate a bunch of stuff. There are people that want to accumulate, just to accumulate, to have a lot of stuff. But for most people, it's not that they want money. It's what money buys them or what it gets them and the impact that it has. And so I think for really good advisors and where the advisory world is going, changing just like VetMed is helping people understand like, how do I use this money and this job and this career to then fulfill my life on the other end, right? And I think ultimately that's where a good advisor
means to an end, yeah.
Interesting, yeah, that's fascinating. That's great. It seems like being a financial planner is actually a really rewarding career because you're helping people kind of through money and think about it in a different way. So much of us, we think of money as the kind of the whole like loss prevention idea, and we're so scared to lose it. And we think of it a little bit maybe as more than just more of a philosophical idea, which leads us into our next section. So we got to talk about Bitcoin. And look, I'm going to butcher this, but I wanted to tee this up a little bit. I'm not a Bitcoin savant or, you know, championing essentially letting go of the kind of what they call fiat currency or like regular paper money. But I know a little bit about it. I started investing in it in 2020. It's a hold, buy and hold strategy. I don't trade it. I don't do anything kind of wacky. But let me just tee this up. So, you know, and you're going to give us a much better overview of it. But essentially, you know, we want you to tell us about Bitcoin. And so I think it's helpful to start that, as far as I understand, and you can correct me, but right after the 2008 crisis or possibly in there, it's an interesting origin story where some guy coded some stuff and it was, you know, essentially code that was embedded and people had to essentially search or mine for it by digging, and you could tell us, you know, all about what that means. And there was a value associated to it, and it has a value because there's only so much of it, which is what creates scarcity, which is what gives something value. And the funny thing about money, quote unquote, like dollar bills, which is why the stock market and prices go up and down and all these things, is because governments can actually change the amount in essentially circulation, which is a little scary because it actually can devalue it because you can just make more of it. And so leads us to Bitcoin. It's this digital gold. That's what people talk about, but I don't even, you know, you can explain what that actually means. So tell us about, first off, what it is and what a complete novice would need to know and where it comes from. And then why Bitcoin? Because I'm sure people have heard about Ether, Dogecoin, you know, some of these other kind of wackadoodle, but they all fall under this what's called cryptocurrency. Also, cryptocurrency has crypto, this kind of scary idea. So we'd love to have you just riff. You're talking to, I would assume, a lot of people who go, Bitcoin, that's some weird thing that I've heard about on the news. And let's just get into it because this is great.
Yeah. Hey, that's a really good overview. I love that. So I'm just going to be like, hey, ditto. That was great. David took care of it. No, but when I think about Bitcoin, like ultimately, you know, when people ask like, what is Bitcoin? If you go back to the kind of origin of it, what Bitcoin's trying to be is digital money, period, right? Like that's ultimately it. And if you think about inventions or things that are impactful to our lives, you think about electricity, you think about like fire back in the day. And it's like money has been one of those things because it allows you to specialize in whatever it is that you do best. And then you can trade that. It's the most liquid tradable item in the world. And so you can go become a great veterinarian, a great vet tech, a great, you know, practice manager. And you don't have to be awesome at, you know, building a home, right? You can trade that money because it is the thing that's the most liquid and tradable. And the challenge is historically money has been chosen by the free market. And so the market has traditionally chosen items, and gold has been one of those things for, you know, thousands of years. And the analogy that anyone's ever heard me talk about is like, okay, if I'm in Rome and I want a nice tunic for the hot date that I have that night, we're going to go watch gladiators fight or whatever, right? Ounce of gold gets me a nice new tunic. We're good. Right. Then an ounce of gold in the 70s, we're going to go out, you know, the big, you know, collars, great suit, probably a wild color, ounce of gold, nice suit.
The John Travolta suit. Yeah, yes, absolutely. Right. I can see it.
Yeah. And then today, ounce of gold's a little over $2,000. I can probably go get a nice suit. I don't wear suits. I had to when I worked at Merrill. I haven't worn a suit in a long time outside of weddings.
You get a lot of hoodies. A lot of hoodies.
Yeah. I thought, now it's purely hoodies and comfortable, comfortable attire. True. And I think that's...
Yeah, fast fashion.
But just the idea of like, what is money? And I think fundamentally answering that question for people is really tricky. But the way that you think about money is like, it's the time and energy and effort that you spend when you're away from your family or friends or hobbies. That's what you get. And and ultimately, if money can be created and it doesn't cost anything, or there's no tether to any sort of input other than just whoever deems it. That's a problem. And so you talked about fiat currency, and today that's where we are. So not just the US dollar, but everything around the world, it is a currency that's backed by just the full faith and credit of the different governments that issue it. And government issued money has not been the default for human history. It's just been more of a phenomenon of the last, call it 50 years. And so it's definitely an experiment. And when people talk about Bitcoin being, you know, this new wacky thing, I agree. You should have skepticism when you hear about Bitcoin the first time. I did. I heard about it in 2017, didn't do anything about it.
Oh, I bet you did. Yeah.
Didn't do anything about it until 2019. But ultimately, what is Bitcoin? It is a digital money because we have a digital world. We're talking right now. You all are in a very different place than I am. We can have this conversation. We couldn't do that, you know, 15 years ago. And so our worlds are moving more digital. It makes sense that we'd have digital money that is not created by a nation state and, you know, suits in a room that dictate monetary policy. It's kind of silly that you think anyone has the foresight and knowledge to direct a global economy made up of individuals that are all working towards different things because they all have different goals. Even going back to the financial planning aspect of it, every individual is working towards something, but that goal might not make sense to someone else, right? Your spending habits and my spending habits are different. And so really what Bitcoin does is it just allows for the freedom of money that's not controlled by one central party to be utilized peer-to-peer in any fashion that you want. And we can unpack that in a lot of different ways. But ultimately, I look at Bitcoin as being one of the things that, think of it like a battery, right? So dollars today that you hold in your bank, they continue to lose value. So it's a battery that can't stay charged. Bitcoin is like a battery that can stay charged because it can hold, maintain, or increase your purchasing power. And that's probably the easiest way to think about it.
That's great. I mean, I appreciate that. I think it's also maybe worth just reminding folks. So, and again, please correct me, but this is how I think about it too, is prior to the 70s, a dollar had some value, and I forget what it is, you probably know, but something connected to gold. So this idea that gold has been, as you mentioned, worth something for thousands of years, right? It's pretty, it's shiny. You know, there's some sort of finite amount. We can find it in, you know, various caves, but at some point there will be probably, you know, we fully mine the gold on Earth. So people said, ooh, we can't get to it very easily. It's shiny, you know, it's worth something. So they connected this piece of paper to that and it just said, you know, essentially $1 is worth some amount of gold. But then I believe it was Nixon, right? Nixon took us what's called off the gold standard and essentially de-anchored a dollar, right? A physical piece of paper or your bank account from anything physical that, you know, had any kind of value. So that's what you're referring to, right? When you talk about it basically now being controlled by the government and the amount of money that's put in or taken out of the economy versus Bitcoin that is, as you said, like people can say, hey, you go to the Bitcoin exchange, there is the value of what a Bitcoin or a partial piece of a Bitcoin would be, and it goes up, it holds its value over time. Is that about right of a summary?
That's, again, fantastic. And I give you kudos. I didn't know the amount of knowledge that you had in this space. It's just really cool to hear it. Again, if we go back a handful of years, like most people, the term fiat currency wouldn't have meant anything. They'd been like fiat, like that's the car, right? Like the little cars in there.
Yeah. Hey, that's where I am right now. He said fiat. Yeah. And I was like, oh, the car's involved with this? I know jack shit about Bitcoin.
So a couple different things. Like, yes, back before. So why did gold fail? And why was gold then? Why do we need paper notes over that? So gold, again, it's hard. It's clunky. It's hard for me to send gold out to California, right? I got to hire a Brinks truck. I do all these things. It's tricky. And also, like, I get somewhere, I want to buy coffee and I have a gold bar. It's worth a lot of money. Like, do I hack off at a corner? Like,
can I have change, please?
Yeah. How do you do that?
Exactly. You can't do that.
And so we issued, what happened is gold became really centralized. We had trusted third party, banks, right? These banks that would hold gold. They would issue redeemable certificates.
Like literally gold bars, right? Like sitting in vaults. Yeah, that's crazy.
And what happened is they realized not many people were actually redeeming back to the gold bars. And so, you know, human greed takes over and you issue more certificates and you devalue the currency. So it used to be redeemable, let's say, for 35 ounces of gold for each certificate. And then all of a sudden it's like 40 and then it's 55 because not everyone's redeeming it because no one's ever kind of coming back and calling the bluff. And so you just devalue it over time. And gold has been used as money because it was hard to get, right? The gold supply issuance grows by about 1-2% per year. So it grows pretty slowly. Now, if gold price goes up, they can obviously mine more and they're going to spend more time. But a lot of times people will say, well, what's Bitcoin backed by? What's it backed by?
Right.
The same way that I would ask, like, what's gold backed by? Gold is the base layer. It is the thing. And Bitcoin is the thing, right? So like it's the thing and then you grow over and above that. And today, the US, you know, dollar, you can talk about whether it's the petrodollar, which is a long thing that we're not going to necessarily get into, but basically just the global trade for oil coming back into dollars. That was done in the 70s after closing the gold window. That's been driving demand for the dollar. Or you could say, hey, it's the military, or it's the tax base, or it's the US consumer. There's lots of different things that you can talk about is the backing by the dollar. But ultimately, it is the full faith and credit of the United States. And I think that's where, for a lot of people, when they start learning about Bitcoin, they learn about how is money made. You know, we live in a credit-based system, which means you always have to issue more debt to keep the, you know, the engine moving. So if you have an engine that has no grease, like no oil, it will seize up. So think of the economy right now in the system that we have. We have to continue to add oil to the engine because it's dripping out so much on the bottom end. And if we don't keep adding oil, that's when you have these like panic moments or things freeze up and lock up. And that's why we're always forced to create new dollars. And that's why it's always ever increasing. And so that cannot functionally stop. Like they cannot stop doing that. So the idea that dollars are all of a sudden going to hold value again, like the system cannot function any other way. It has to devalue it, which is leads me to, real quick to the term putting money to work. I used to say that for years and I hate that saying. You've already worked 40, 50, 60 hours for that damn money. You don't need to put it to work.
Right.
Why are you putting it to work? Why do you have to be a part-time investment manager to like make ends meet and save for the future? It's so ridiculous that that's normalized. And so like that idea of putting money to work is just silly to me.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think going back to an original point too, just to also, I think sometimes we may be operating from a different base. So essentially, if you think of money or gold or Bitcoin or anything, what we're talking about is an asset, something that you can use to do something else with, whether you're purchasing, you know, a business uses it to make money, right? To purchase equipment or whatever. We use it to, you know, buy cars or buy shoes or whatever. So it's the same idea you were talking about. If you drill all the way down to your house, which is also an asset, what backs the house? Well, the fact that it's worth something. Well, what back? It's totally this trust-based idea of, well, the car is, I mean, a car is a depreciating asset, but you know, it's worth something because we think it's worth something. So totally makes sense. And I think that's a good thing for the listeners to understand too, is when they say, well, you know, what backs up Bitcoin? You're right. Nothing but the idea of the value in the market, because it is what, you know, what's called kind of the base layer of, as you said, an underlying asset, something that's like backing it up. Same thing with a house though, you could argue, right? Well, then they say the land is worthwhile. Okay, well, what is the land on? Well, it's dirt and stone, right? So it is this idea of we believe that something is worth something because of basically what somebody else will pay for it. That's essentially where the worth comes from. And to kind of bring it back a little bit to our vein, you know, your veterinary practice owners is worth what somebody else will basically pay for it. It generates money in your pocket, but when you sell it to a corporation or you want to sell it to an associate, you're typically selling it for a little bit more than the money you're getting every year for it. And that's because somebody will pay something for that. So that's kind of what we're referring to when we talk about what's backing that. And it's an important concept because you're right. Like, why is a car, it's the same thing we talk about art, right? Why is Picasso so valuable? Because somebody else will pay $50 million for it, right?
Yeah. There's this idea of intrinsic value, which is a flawed concept. And I hear people trot it out all the time. If I'm in the Sahara Desert, is a Rolls Royce or a bottle of water have more value to me? Bottle of water. But if I'm in
100%, it's going to be 1,000 times more valuable, right?
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Like, am I going to be able to do anything? And so the idea of intrinsic value, again, goes back to we are a collection of individuals and what we value is going to be different. It just depends on where we're at.
So as somebody who does not know jack shit about any of this stuff, I feel like you guys are talking way over my head. I'm just
soaking
it all in.
Let me ask you, what's the Bitcoin question?
I want to bring it back around to Bitcoin and how it can relate to the financial management of our practices, specifically speaking to a practice owner, because like David just said, they own the practice. But as a manager, what benefit can it offer us? Like, what do we do with now great this Bitcoin? How does it relate to our financial health and management in a practice?
Yeah. So if I looked at Bitcoin as an asset to a business, and there are a couple of veterinarians that I know, again, that hold Bitcoin as an asset on their balance sheet because they maybe want to expand or they want to hire an associate, they want to do something. And so how do they store their value? They can hold it in dollars. They can, you know, pay down debt, or they could buy Bitcoin. Now that's a very small, I can count them on my hand how many are doing that today.
Yeah, I bet. Right.
But it is something that eventually will change. And I think the other question is, you all work really hard in a veterinary, you know, clinic and hospital. Why do you want to be paid in something that can just be created out of thin air? Because that's basically just stealing your time. Fundamentally, that's what happens when we create new dollars as a country to solve XYZ issues. So the idea from a manager or an owner of a business, to me, it's just a way to store and, you know, allow the value that you've already created to exist into the future so you can do the things you want to do. And maybe you don't have to take out a loan for the next thing that you want to do, right? And maybe that helps from that standpoint. The other thing is if you have a team, and we all know that pay in veterinary medicine is, you know, hard for a lot of the adjacent team, the non-DVM team, right, to have a career. So one thing, and this is not necessarily a plug for Swan, but that we have an offering where it's called a Bitcoin Benefit Program, or BBP. So think of it like a Bitcoin 401k without all the red tape and regulatory stuff, but you just allow the team to get Bitcoin into account for them, and it goes up over time in value because ultimately it's a long-term savings mechanism. And so what you could do is you can incentivize your team to stay and or say, I want to make sure that I can take care of you and you're going to get X amount per month, you know, or if we hit certain goals, you're going to get an extra amount in here and it's going to save in this money. And you might think I'm a little crazy because Dr. Isaiah thinks Bitcoin's good and you think it's wild and nutty. But over time, as it increases in value, maybe you can also educate and inform them on how this Bitcoin thing works and actually make an impact on their own personal lives. And that to me is a huge benefit that I think is underserved because it's hard today for people to grasp kind of the Bitcoin narrative. But ultimately, Bitcoin is going to go through various different stages. And right now it's in that store of value stage. I save into it, it goes up in value, that's great. It's going to move into medium exchange, which means we, you know, pay for veterinary services, we go to the grocery store, maybe we pay for it, we pay vendors, we do whatever. And then it's going to go to unit of account, which is how we measure our net worth, you know, how much money we have, all that other stuff. And I think the earlier people adopt Bitcoin, the better and the bigger impact it has. And so going back to like the very beginning, when I think about like, okay, what am I going to spend my time, energy, and effort on? It's this weird Bitcoin and veterinary medicine like mashup. And there's so much frustration sometimes within veterinary medicine that the pay is not there, the pay is not there, the pay is not there. One of the easiest things to do is like, well, if we just adopt better money, we can help solve some of that. It's not going to solve everything. There are plenty of issues that this does not solve. And I get that. But this can help in a way that would be material. And it is an easy lift in my mind to say, we could accept Bitcoin because A, we could get new patients in our practice because there are other weird people like Isaiah that will come to you just because you accept Bitcoin. They might be a little kooky, but I bet they have pets. I know they do. And you can save money from a, you know, processing. So if you have merchant processing today, you're paying a healthy amount on that today just to process a credit card. You're not getting paid in cash. So Bitcoin can lower that. And you get paid in money that you can hold. It will grow and retain value. So like those are the ways that I would look at Bitcoin in a practice as being beneficial.
That's so interesting. It's funny you mentioned that because I've seen these Bitcoin ATMs that are popping up. And I've also seen, typically it's like 7-Elevens and stuff, but they'll say Bitcoin accepted here. And so again, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, like what you're actually talking about. So there's one piece, which is investing. And I think it's probably just good for to say, like, nobody's giving financial advice on this podcast. Like, do not, you know, whatever, go talk to a professional. But it is like, you know, buy some Bitcoin and you'd hold it. And there's exchanges where you can, you know, move it around. But then you said there's also, it might be at some point in the future, I say that I'm worth a Bitcoin or two Bitcoin, all of the things that I own are kind of under that. And then that third piece is you could actually advertise or you could accept, like somebody comes in and says, you know, your bill is 0.007 Bitcoin and they can pay you in Bitcoin. So those are like really cool and interesting. And so those are kind of the things that like you were going through. But I don't think, I think it would be like, I see people's heads exploding that at a practice, they could offer care credit, they could offer debit and credit cards, cash. And oh, by the way, if you have a, you know, if you have a Bitcoin in your digital wallet, like we accept that too. That's pretty crazy.
Okay, yeah. So wait. Okay, big time out here. Yeah, like, no,
we got to address.
Dundre has some questions.
Yeah.
So David just said there's like, kind of broke it down into three areas. So I understand that like 401k, IRA, like I can invest in my future. I can say I want $20 of my paycheck put towards this IRA or put towards this account. And I have this wonderful certified financial planner that takes my 401k, invests it to the stocks, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I can wrap my head around that. Fantastic. I can run out tomorrow and go buy some Bitcoin stock. Fantastic. But then he said something about like, I can be worth one Bitcoin. Okay, so that's just a whole cool another thing we'll put on the side there. Just say, pause that. The third thing then is we can go to an ATM, which I've seen weird Bitcoin ATMs, and then go to a veterinary hospital that accepts Bitcoin. So now I feel like I can take money out of my 401k, right? And it turns into cash and I can go buy something. When I'm using Bitcoin out of practice, I don't take this Bitcoin to the bank and then get cash out of it to make my employees like, or pay the distributor or like the lease on the practice. So you just blew my mind, David. on practices can accept Bitcoin. Does it turn into dollars somewhere? No.
It could if you wanted to, but you could just retain it as an asset on your balance sheet. So if I'm a practice owner, you have dollars in the bank, you have some Bitcoin that you hold as well.
So if somebody pays their services in Bitcoin, I can't pay a bill with that, I guess, unless the distributor took Bitcoin.
Correct.
Or my property management company took Bitcoin. So it's a digital currency, but somebody else has to take, it's like a euro to me. You give me a euro for my services, but I'm just going to put this euro in my pocket because I can't use it unless I go to Spain next week.
Yeah. So there's a funny expression in, so I think earlier we talked about like Bitcoin versus crypto. So I'm always going to talk about Bitcoin. I think the rest of crypto is much more akin to gambling or other things. Right?
There's more than Bitcoin?
No. But I'm not going to talk about that because it's not, no. That's not the story, but yeah, the euro. So the way that an asset monetizes, so any asset that's ever become money, it's become a collectible, it's become a store of value, it's become a medium of exchange, and then a unit of account. So it has to progress through those kind of layers. Right now, Bitcoin is in store of value. So if you accept it, it is digital money. It is money that you can pay for something peer-to-peer with no intermediary. So I can accept it at my veterinary hospital without any issue. If I want to convert it back to dollars, I certainly can. I don't think that you're going to have a rash of people all of a sudden, even if you accept it. So I want to always qualify this.
Right.
Tomorrow,
sure, 100%,
every hospital opens up and says, we're going to accept Bitcoin. You might get one person a month.
Yeah.
The reason being is because more people have to figure out that Bitcoin is the best store of value before they have it to use it for medium of exchange. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I want to
hold this asset before I'm going to go use it and spend it. And so it is a progression. Yeah. I think for a forward-thinking practice that maybe wanted to be, hey, I'm a de novo startup, I'm young, I kind of like Bitcoin personally as an owner, and I want to offer it as a benefit, and I want to use it from some marketing, I want to be unique, I think there's merit to that. And it can lower, again, your merchant processing. So you can be set up with a company today to accept Bitcoin payments. It's going to cost you 0.5%, and maybe it can be done in 7 minutes. And then you can hold it or you can pay 1% and it converts auto back to dollars. Like you can do that. It can be super easy.
Sure.
But most people are not going to do that. The key thing is you need to understand why it has any value. Because if I'm here and I'm like, hey, Bitcoin's great, and you think it's some scam and something crazy, you're never going to use it to pay for services. You have to understand ultimately.
Sure. You don't even have any.
Right.
Yeah. You don't have any. And so for people to want it, the demand is there for store value. And so I think that is firmly where we are today, even though we may talk about where these things go in the future. But if I'm putting on my goggles for the end of the decade and further, hospitals are going to accept Bitcoin. So my question is, if you want to be on the forefront of that, you can start doing it now. You can start learning. It's not too much to the team. It is if you have a device that you can show a QR code, that's all they have to do. You can punch in the dollar amount because you're not going to say, hey, your bill was 0.01 Bitcoin. No, our unit of account is still dollars. You're going to say, hey, it's $125 today. If you want to pay in Bitcoin, I can ring that up. Here's the QR. They scan it, pay it. It's confirmed. Great. Dr. Isaiah is not going to be on my behind.
So how do you even say then, like, everything we look at is in dollars? So you're blowing my mind right now. Yeah. I have to stretch this muscle a little bit, right? So okay, x-rays. I don't even know how much x-rays are. Let's just say they're $250 for some x-rays, right? $250 for x-rays. Is it 250 Bitcoin? Like, is it the same?
No,
I can't imagine it's the same. Right,
no,
exactly.
It's
so
exchange
how do you
rate.
Then convert? Yeah, like you have
it's
a
exchange rate, right?
You go to bitcoin.com and ask for like, how much do I, how many bits do I pay for this?
Yeah.
How many this gold bars great. Do I exchange this for this x-ray?
So Bitcoin it's divisible, right? So every Bitcoin has 100 million Satoshis. So today, one Satoshi is worth 400 of a
maybe pound. I shouldn't have asked that question.
Your head just exploded.
Never mind.
No, it's great. So like, think of it as he's doing, like, think of it, there's also these new ways to trade fractional stocks. So a stock is one unit, but you can buy 100. That's the idea. You can take a Bitcoin and break it up into a lot of tiny parts.
I guess I see a gold bar, the same thing, right? Like,
$100 bill.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to think, though, if we decide to take Bitcoin and I'm charging you $250 for x-ray, we have to be set up for the fact not only to take the Bitcoin, but how much is that x-ray going to be worth? Because I got to now translate this into Bitcoins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's tools today that would basically, you just put in the dollar amount and it's going to calculate the exchange rate right there. You don't have to know anything. I literally just put in $25, $250, $1,000, boom. and then someone pays it, right? That's it. That's all gotcha. You got to do.
Yeah.
You
don't all have right. to do any That's
of the,
cool.
yeah.
any of the
yeah.
mental math. You literally can just show a QR code on a phone and you're golden. That's all they got to do.
Process it through.
Yep.
That's
process
crazy.
It through.
Yeah.
Well, I assume that's like going to exchange rate, right? When you go turn your money in, if you're going to get euros, mm-hmm. right? You just go and they say, oh, this is exchange rate. So right. here you go.
Exactly.
So, okay. I just needed a minute to process that. Yeah. I could see my little hamster was on the wheel.
Hey, it's totally fine. And it takes time. I think the reason I talk about Bitcoin so much is you need it like 8 to 12 to whatever touch points before it really makes any sense. And so for a lot of people, the first time they hear this, they're going to be like, I have no idea what that guy just said. He ran it and raved.
That's totally me. I'm going to have to listen to this episode a few times.
And it's like at the end of the day, they're going to be like, I don't know. I think this Bitcoin thing just sounds weird. I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to do anything with it. And then they have another touch point, another touch point. And then they have people maybe that are close to them. And then all of a sudden they spend some time and try to learn and they start to open up. And similar, David, to what you talked about, like you didn't know anything about fiat currency. Shoot, I was a financial advisor for years and I don't think I understood what money was. And that blows your mind when you think about there are people paid that talk about investments, but they don't understand the fundamental layer, which is money. They don't understand that the money itself fundamentally has been broken in our country for a while. And a lot of these issues that we see, whether it's political, whether it's in our food or education, all these things, it's all downstream of money because money is the incentive mechanism. It's how we measure things. And so if the measurements are broken, that's really hard to then figure out how to do things. So if you try to build a house, but the measurements change every day, your house is never going to get done or it's going to look really artistic.
So yeah, that makes sense. So pulling it back a little bit, I mean, and we super appreciate that's obviously a specialty. And, you know, you're obviously an expert and it's a unique.
Yeah, I got my mini lesson. Perfect.
Yeah. Like, you know, people talk about, you know, investing in, you know, you do stocks or you real estate, like you're a specialist in that asset class. But if we zoom back a little bit, you're also a certified financial planner. So you understand and are passionate about making people's lives better, as you said, through kind of the work they put in and being able to maximize that. So thinking about your, you know, financial training, what are some of the key financial challenges that you have seen with veterinary practices? What are, you know, areas that they struggle with managing a business, running a business, you know, getting value out of that business? And then, you know, kind of walk us through how you might approach it as a CFP to help not just even the practice owner, but the staff in the practice too, you know, be successful.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the way that I look at that is, so ultimately a veterinary practice is just like any other business where it's predicated on you have inputs and you have outputs. And like at the end of the day, you want a business that is profitable, right? Like it's very simplistic to say, that's the key thing. And so looking at how do you do pricing? And I think anyone that's listening to this, they're still with us after the Bitcoin conversation, right? Pricing is very difficult. What are you going to do? Just call random other places? Like you should set your pricing based on what is the service model that you're offering. And the way that pricing is set in veterinary medicine is so goofy. Like there's no rhyme or reason. I've asked, you know, tens of hundreds of practice owners how they do pricing. It's always, oh,
yeah, they just pull it out of the cloud. Yeah. Like literally, not their software cloud, out of clouds outside. Like they go outside, it's sunny, here's one. Yeah. Cloudy, here's another one.
And so like
totally no rhyme or reason.
What their time is worth in pricing things appropriately, like really spending time with that. And I'm not the pricing expert and guru. Again, like that's not what I do. I know there are people that do a really great job at that. And that makes a material lift and impact on profitability. And when you think about a practice sale down the road, whether it's to an associate or corporate, and we don't even need to touch like thoughts and opinions and all that, it's like for every dollar missed of revenue, it's $3 on the valuation. And so like that's a huge change in material amount of money that could impact like the ability to retire, the ability to do the things that this person wants to do, because you know, you miss that revenue, you miss those things, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe you aren't able to sell. And so I think really trying to hone in on like, how do we charge? What do we charge? And are we charging in a way that makes sense? And I think for a lot of veterinarians, they come into the industry because they're passionate about, you know, serving others and taking care of animals. And then they feel guilty if they have financial success. And it's like, you can do awesome medicine and still be financially successful and not have this like inner battle and dialogue that you're doing something bad or you're like ripping off the world. It's like, if you're not there and you're not able to like feed your family and like keep things moving, you're of no help to anyone, right? It's the idea of like the airplane where you got to put on your oxygen mask before others. You have to have a sustainable business that's viable so you can pay your people so they can actually keep showing up so you can actually provide the care. Like there's all these things that you have to do.
Domino effect, yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about budget and financial planning because this is where, and financial forecasting, like David and I kind of geek out a little bit, probably a little bit too much on the financial aspect of practices and KPIs and, you know, give me a good spreadsheet and a budget and I'm a happy camper. With the, I will say, volatility of veterinary medicine, well, the world the last 3 years, and the chronic changes that we've had to go through, let's talk a little bit about some steps that either practice owners or managers, how we can take some steps towards good, solid financial planning, budgeting, and forecasting. Because the volatility of what we've gone through, how do we take uncertainties when things aren't changing? Like, we didn't know what was going to happen 3 years ago, right? And we're still uncertain. We have, like, the market is shit right now. Nobody can give us an answer, which I don't expect people to give us, you know, look at their crystal eight ball and know what's going to happen tomorrow. But, you know, you're talking about 10 years from now, right? So put on those goggles and talk to us about how we can create and maintain some budgets and some forecasts with such uncertainty right now.
Well, I'm glad I'm here because I have the crystal ball and have all the anthems. No, I'm just kidding. Like,
perfect. Like, take a little shake right? up your little eight ball and see at the bottom what it says. Ask again tomorrow. Yeah.
I think it's one of those that it's like incredibly difficult to like pinpoint this is the answer. And the way
Right? Because you'd be a billionaire, quadrillion Bitcoiner. Yeah.
Only 21 million Bitcoin. So that would
that's
be the
what max. You'd be worth.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that would hold it and would never sell it. So what I would say is, like, ultimately, again, going back to veterinary medicine, like, there's this idea of, for the business to be sustainable, it's all about the talent that's there. And so when I would look at, okay, forecasting and looking through these different things, making sure like you have a good process in place where you're checking in with everyone across the team, understanding where they're at, and also forecasting that they're going to have to increase their incomes, and having a good plan in place and structure for showing them that, hey, this is not just a job, this can be a career, and this is how you can progress, and tie that to picking up a new skill, right? Not just because you show up and can fog a mirror 12 months later that you all of a sudden get more money. That's not how the world works. And you need to have those conversations. But understanding, like, okay, where are we doing really well? Like, where's our revenue derived from today? Where is the average in a lot of other hospitals? Where are we really good? I know dentistry is fun. Mary Berg, we saw her when we were up in Maine.
Go Mary, so dental, like, diva.
Dentistry, for example. Some people hate it. Some people love it. It can be a really nice revenue source. Well, maybe you're like, I hate it, I'm never going to do it. Don't spend the time and energy on focusing on that. But like, where are the areas that you can do more? Maybe you love surgery. Okay, are there things that you need to then be bringing into the practice to equip that? And then are you light on the talent that's there as well? The way that I would try to look at that is understanding, okay, from the input side, like, yes, things have been nutty the last 3 years and costs have been all over the place. And so it's been hard because you feel like you've had to raise prices over and over again. That's starting to soften a little bit, but ultimately you need to still have a really good ability to track that stuff. And I know inventory is like the worst nightmare for most practices, and it's so difficult to get your arms around that, but trying to find someone that will own that and having the ability to say, okay, who from a talent perspective on our team is in the right place? We have the right team members. Who is okay, but we might need to make a change there, and who do we really need to make a change? Because ultimately culture is going to drive everything else. And if you have that person that's going to destroy it, you have to make that change. But then also knowing, okay, where are the areas that we're deriving most of our revenue? And if the person that's the issue is driving a lot of revenue, that could be a major problem. And maybe that's why you haven't made that hard decision. But where do I make revenue? Who are my key players? And then how do I either double down and grow the pieces that we're really good at? Is it new equipment? Is it expanding? Is it doing something different? That's how I would plan out things for the future. But ultimately, you have to make sure that you can get there. And that goes back to the pricing and like understanding the input cost. So it's a big, big nebulous thing of like, what's the right answer? But I think ultimately, if you have the right people, and it sounds so cliche, but you have the right people there, the rest will really actually handle itself, because any business is a talent acquisition business. In my opinion, as a leader, your job is to attract and retain really good talent, equip them for the job that you hired them for,
and
make
let
sure
them
you get
do
the
it.
Hell out of the way so that they can
right.
do it. Because it's that's why they're true. There. And if you do that, you can be successful in spite of so many other things. But ultimately, you got to get the people right.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I would assume that you would recommend the services in which you work in, i.e. a CFP. What would be the benefits that you would think bringing CFP, but a financial planner, you know, would be to a practice owner, to maybe a practice as a business, or even a practice owner offering a CFP services to their employees as a benefit?
I think CFP for an owner is really helpful because you have the personal and the professional, and those are so hard to separate. So you need someone that understands both. There are a handful of people that are CFPs that are taking on clients that do a great job with practice owners. So the Veterinary Financial Advisor Network is a network that I helped start a while back. Again, I'm not in that space. I don't have any service that someone can use, but I think that would be a great place to start. Those are great people to talk to that can help, that get veterinary medicine and can help kind of bring the two together. From a practice perspective, financial planners are great, but I think from a practice perspective, I would actually encourage to get a really good, strong CPA, because I think ultimately garbage in, garbage out for numbers and reporting and KPIs. And like, I think a really good veterinary specific, like solid CPA is going to make a world of difference there. As much as I love my CFPs, I think a CPA would be the first thing that I would highlight and circle and star is like, if I have, you know, your brother-in-law or some random person that maybe doesn't get vet med very well, that's doing your books, I would make that update in 2024 to make sure that you have the right person, because that's going to drive and dictate much of this stuff.
Absolutely.
As much as I think CFPs are helpful, I think you got to get that first. And if you're going to spend the money,
like, my
resources are strained, it's like, go get that person, because ultimately, if you have the practice humming, you're going to have more discretionary income. Then you can talk about all the other things to do with it, whether it's to reinvest in the business, personally take it out of the business, invest, buy Bitcoin, whatever it is, right?
That makes sense. I mean, as we start to sunset the show, I think it sounds great. You heard it here first, guys. Go get a CPA tomorrow or on Jan 1. If it's your, and no offense, if you're your cousin Bob, cut the cord and go get a real CPA. We've had a lot of great ones on the show.
Yeah, and I'll jump on to say that, you know, all three of us are members of Vet Partners, and Vet Partners has some amazing CPAs. Most of them are veterinary specific. And if they're not veterinary specific, they are veterinary experienced. Mm-hmm. So jump on the Vet Partners website and check them out. Yeah. If you want a personal recommendation, you know, feel free to email us here at the podcast and we'll give you some. But absolutely, Vet Partners is a great place to look. And I would agree with you, Isaiah, like get a good veterinary specific CPA that is really going to help you with your financial planning of your business for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So Isaiah, is there anything else that you think would be a good financial habit that practice owners, practice managers should put into place? We always like to kind of end this part of the show with things that people could start tomorrow or like the next week. So what's one last takeaway that people should start doing ASAP for their practices?
For the practice, I think it would be, what are the three things I want to get done in 2024? Circle and star those, and then say, okay, am I working on those things this week, this month, and like continue to revisit that from a financial perspective? What are those goals? Is it certain growth? Is it certain hires? And I think that to me would be one of the big things that you could do. Obviously, everyone should explore learning about Bitcoin, because I do think that is that important. I don't say that lightly. I don't say that in jest. I don't say that as a joke. I do think it makes a material impact for the future of a lot of people. And I think within veterinary medicine, it could help. Again, it's not going to solve all the issues, but it's going to solve some, because I think a financial burden is hard for a lot of folks. And so from a personal perspective, learn about it. And I think with education, the conviction of like what you want to own goes up from there.
So give us some trusted sources to where we could go find out some things about Bitcoin. Because I feel like right now, if I Google it.
Yep. Absolutely. No,
that's probably not the thing to do. Right?
So again, soft plug, and I didn't create it, but Swan did an awesome job. If you go to welcome.swanbitcoin.com, it's a 101 course. Natalie Brunel helped to create some of the content with it, but she has a broadcasting background, really great on camera, fantastic at explaining things. And I think she does an awesome job. It's broken into like five different parts, but it's an hour. And so that's where perfect. I would encourage people to go is welcome.
Great start. Yeah. Okay. 101, right? For us Bitcoin idiots, right? Okay. Fantastic. I would love for you to give one piece of advice to share with our listeners or share with your younger self, should your younger self listen.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, as a whole, most people today, we can't have conversations where we disagree. And I think that ultimately is hampering a lot of things across the country. And if we can respect each other enough to have a disagreement and be like, you know what, Isaiah, I think you're absolutely wrong. But as a human, I think you're a good person. And I might really disagree with what you're saying, but I'm willing to have a conversation that I don't hate you by the end of it. I think that would do a lot of good. So that would be my advice, is maybe have some of those conversations that aren't always fun, but learn how to have a conversation where you can disagree with someone and not end it with, you know, spewing hate to each other. So that's what I would say.
I love that. Thank you.
Hey, Andrea here. Have you seen our social media pages? Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also find us on our website, www.positiveleaders.com. And if you like what you see there, be sure to give Rhonda and Linda a shout out over at Dog Days Consulting. They do all of our social media management. They even built our website. Those ladies can work some creative magic for your business and your brand. Check them out on Facebook at Dog Days Consulting or visit their website at www.dogdaysconsulting.com.
So at this point in the show, we're going to go into the rapid fire. Tell me about your most epic failure that has left a lasting impact.
I once hit a car in college, didn't leave a note, and then had a police officer visit me the next time, and it was horrible. It all worked out.
Tell me about your proudest moment.
Birth of our first son.
Why vet med? What do you love about our profession?
It's the people, and any other answer is wrong.
Self-care, work-life balance. How do you practice it? How do you decompress?
I think you have to find joy in both because you can't basically separate the two.
How do you balance work and life? And do you experience any work guilt in that balance?
I think anyone that says they don't is lying. You're always going to be doing that. But I think it's just trying to have honest, open communication with your family.
What keeps you up at night? Things that stress you out or cause you anxiety in your business or the world?
I don't want all the rich people to buy Bitcoin.
And what gets you up and out of bed in the morning? What excites you to start your day?
I want normal people to buy Bitcoin.
What color best describes you?
Orange.
And if you could be any animal in the world, what would it be and why?
Say an alligator. They've been around forever. Long lasting, sustainable.
Just like Bitcoin, right?
You got it.
Awesome. Isaiah, well, thank you.
That was so great. Thank you, Isaiah.
Super fun. I will say this is probably, in a good way, one of the most different pods we've ever done.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a clusterfuck or something.
Yeah, but it's all good. I hope our listeners will love it.
I'm sure.
I hope we get through it. If they can slog through it, I think there's some good stuff in there. And I think ultimately the benefit of, like, where do I go to learn about this stuff? Like, that for me is, like, get people to understand it. But that really does. Like, I want normal people. I want the person that's a CSR. I want the person that...
Yeah, right. 100%.
Buy some Bitcoin. Like, just learn over time.
Yeah, that's important.
That's a big deal for me.
So, Isaiah, one more quick question for you. If our listeners want to reach out to you and get a hold of you, learn more about you and Bitcoin and all the things, financial planning that you offer, how and what is the best way for our listeners to find you?
Connect with me on LinkedIn or send me an email at isaiah@swanbitcoin.com.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Thank you.
For all the positive leaders listening out there, we hope you learned something to take back to your practice to put into use tomorrow.
We want to hear from you, good, bad, and everything in between. So email us at positiveleaders@gmail.com. That's positive with a P-A-W. Want to hear about a specific topic on the podcast? Email us. Want to have your You Can't Make This Shit Up story featured? Email us.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the Positive Leadership Podcast. And be sure to rate us. Check out our website at www.positiveleaders.com. That's positive with a P-A-W. And as always, catch us on all the socials.
This is Andrea.
And David.
Signing off until next time. Stay happy and sane.
The Positive Leadership Podcast is solely for informational purposes. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions provided in this podcast are general in nature, and such information, statements, comments, views, and opinions, and the receipt of this podcast by any listener are not intended to be and should not be construed as the provision of any business advice. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions expressed or provided in this podcast, including by speakers and guests, are those of Andrew Crabtree, David Liss, and their guests only, may not be current, and do not represent the statements, comments, views, and opinions of any other person or business entity. Andrea Crabtree, David Liss, and or the Positive Leadership Podcast do not make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of any of the information, statements, comments, views, or opinions contained in this podcast, and any liability, therefore, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage of any kind whatsoever, is expressly disclaimed.